We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Okay, Russ, for the score in Chicago. The Danny Parkin Show.
Please tell for local talk show host Danny Parkin.
Afternoons on the score.
Are you a lottery player? Do you play the lottery?
I should be right now.
It's one of my favorite games is to get mildly intoxicated and then be like, so what would you do? What would you spend money on? Would you scream? Frankly, I think I'd be very good at it. I'd be good
at spending the money.
Yeah, yeah, I'd be great at it.
But would your values remain the same? You know what I mean?
No. No. I don't need any more money. I'm not greedy. As long as I've got my health and my millions of dollars and my gold house and my rocking car, I don't need anything else.
I would change. I would change. Probably for the worse, but
be
better
great.
For me.
That'd be great if, like, yeah, I'll tell you what, Danny, you won all that money, and he totally changed. He totally and completely. Best thing I can say about Danny, won all that money, and he changed completely. 100%. He's no longer the guy that he was at all.
How do you sleep at night? Can you live with yourself? And I can't.
You'd move. You would do more charity.
When Alex Snellius won the lottery back in 2000, he never thought he'd feel like this. Is it a blessing or a curse?
No, it's a curse.
That's $5,000 donated by Alex Snellius.
The time I won the bad beat at the casino in L.A., and you go and you get paid off and all the chips, and I'm walking around, I'm tipping people like $100 each time. Like, here you go.
He'd give the doorman $100 just for opening the door. He'd shove hundreds in the pockets of the dealers and all the guys that ran the game. The bartender got $100 just for keeping the ice cubes cold.
Like that feeling of like changing somebody's life with a $100 tip, I would enjoy that.
I think that's overstating that you were changing someone's life.
Oh, I was. I was.
Okay.
Tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
That's it?
Damn straight. I think if I were a millionaire, I could hook that up too, because chicks dig dudes with money.
Well, not all chicks.
Well, the type of chicks that double up on a dude like me do.
The Danny Parkin Show.
That's what all the kids listen to you, man. You are the best thing on the radio!
Afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
I maintain I'd be a great lottery winner. There was a story at USA Today that was like, why winning the Mega Millions might not actually make you happy. Yeah, I want to try.
Yeah, take your chances. That's fair.
Yeah.
Got to be able to do it.
It'd be a new set of problems. Right? It'd be how to manage the money, how to not get scammed, how do you say no to people, where do you draw the line, how do you find meaning in your life once you have to change things and maybe you quit your job and do it. But yeah, it'd be a new set of things to figure out with $850 million. So I'd be interested in trying to figure it out in that particular scenario.
I used to fantasize, me and my brother, John, when we had our band together, Brother Brother, we used to talk about the Brother Brother Mansion that we were once, one day going to build. And I used to fantasize about it and still have the living room of my dreams there in mind, where there is a giant walk-in refrigerator, one wall, one entire wall is a walk-in refrigerator with two floors. Like you go in and then you go up the staircase of the walk-in refrigerator to get to the other level as needed. That's an entire wall of the living room just
Why
available.
Do you want to walk into your refrigerator?
Because I'll have a lot of stuff in there, man. a lot of variety, and just be able to pick it everything I want. You know those times where you lean down and you have to like reach to the back of the refrigerator for something and you're not sure if that's the old stuff or the good stuff? Those are some of the worst moments.
That's an inconvenience that you would remove from your life if you won the Mega
Yes.
Millions.
I would have giant overstuffed comfortable chairs everywhere, standing ashtrays, even if I wasn't smoking, just like available right for the side there. And I'd have a button that turned any chair in my house into a toilet immediately, just immediately transformed it into a toilet, because the hassle of actually having to get up and go to the bathroom and deal with all that is ridiculous. I would, if I could pay, I just wouldn't have that toilet availability anywhere I am.
Isn't that sensible? In the movie Idiocracy? Don't they sit on toilets to just like hang around?
I believe they do.
Yeah.
And I
forgot
wondering...
that from Idiocracy. Which
Welcome
is, of
to
course,
Costco. I love you. It's the best movie.
That is a great movie.
Speaks. I'm wondering if like these fantasies need a little bit of updating because like a lot of this stuff sounds like laziness and maybe back before veganism and your new like I want to live long and I'm eating healthy. Like you want a 2-story refrigerator and a chair that you never need to leave. Like that doesn't sound like the healthiest way to age gracefully.
Yeah, not a good recipe for an active life. You could be right. You could be right.
Yeah, just saying. And again.
Okay. That's
I'm
fair.
The guy who's saying I'm going to change for the worse. So I'm not throwing stones at a glass house here.
Thinking like maybe you should I should segue instead to healthier living to maximize time on planet and make use of the $850 million? I'll take that under advisement. That's fair.
You're like, I'd have a moving walkway to get me from anywhere I wanted to in the house. I'd actually have people carry me like I was a prince coming in on it. Yeah.
We're getting somewhere.
You're just done walking, okay? Interesting. You want to be done walking once he wins $850 million. But hey, you know, everybody has their dreams.
Yeah. Well, you know, you would change. I love that you would definitely change. I'm just saying that I would further descend down a path that perhaps I am already on. That's really all I would do.
I respect it. Honestly, what was the weirdest part of the inauguration today? Because I have to be honest with you, when I saw Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton having a conversation with a giggling Alex Rodriguez, I was like, man, this is a pretty weird country.
Keep the salsa coming.
like A-Rod is like chortling laughing and then like, in comes J-Lo to the picture. I'm like, oh, this is a weird 6-person conversation.
She wants some more salsa.
That's why he was there. J-Lo was the ticket in for Alex.
Yes.
And that is...
Jennifer Lopez's fiancé, Alex Rodriguez, says that J-Lo is more nervous to perform at tomorrow's inauguration than at the Super Bowl. A-Rod says that she wants to bring people together to inspire. Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis will star together in a new Super Bowl commercial for Cheetos Pop Mix. This is the first time the couple will be on screen together since That 70s Show.
Fun fact. Again, America, kind of a weird place.
Do you know who my wife is? Do you know?
Hey, he's here to work the 6 to 12. You want me to bring him in?
Oh, no. We're good.
only if we're going to play it for him.
We haven't played it in a long time.
Yeah, I know she's a pretty girl.
Oh, God. Poor it's studs. So poor studs.
No. He created greatness. No. He created greatness. Don't feel sorry for that.
Well, he feels the pain. He feels the victimization. He should not feel that. He should be able to remove that.
He should not have thought that I was Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah, right.
Nip it in the bud right there.
Yeah, that was the first mistake.
That's true.
And then if you did think that he was Ashton Kutcher.
He's back in the
room. Oh,
okay. No, we're not talking about that.
Shh.
We're not talking about that in the 5 o'clock hour. It's not something we would do. Absolutely.
We wouldn't do that. So I saw A-Rod there. I saw A-Rod there, and I'm thinking, man, that is the biggest liar and cheat that's been near the presidency in almost 4 hours. You know?
Yeah. Exactly.
It's been 4 hours. We finally got A-Rod. What the A-Rod? So, seeing A-Rod there was weird. There was some dude wearing Jordans. Did we ever figure out who that was? The person walking down the steps wearing the Jordans?
The Dior behind? Jordan 1s, man.
Yes,
those shoes
yes.
are like $10,000. Like they are crazy expensive shoes on the secondary market. And I saw him and I was like, I don't know who it is. But that's actually the coolest person on stage. Forget Obama. Forget J-Lo.
I think it might be Kamala Harris's son-in-law.
Really?
I think so.
Really? Well,
showing up with the Jordan Dior, the Christian Dior Jordans?
Yes. It was a very, very good look. There were some questionable looks.
Is that appropriate, though? Sneakers, even if they're absurdly high-end Christian Dior Jordans, is that appropriate to the inauguration?
I mean...
No!
Wait a minute.
Is the answer.
So you'd rather wear, like, $200 black leather dress shoes?
Sure. My Cole Haans. My $85 Cole Haans I would wear. Absolutely.
Over $10,000 Jordans. I'm wearing the $10,000 Jordans every single time. I loved that look. Although I will say, Shane's guy, Garth Brooks, with the jeans, like, you're wearing the Jordans and you're in the background. You're not expecting your shoes to go viral. Garth knows he's got a performance role. Like, he is going to be up in the front. He's going to be on camera. I felt like he could have maybe done better than jeans today, Shane. That's how I felt.
Okay, you wore a winter hat and a neck gaiter indoors yesterday during your show. There's
wait,
no
like the
need.
Pros? Just yeah, like the pros?
Just like, the, just pros like the pros.
Those jeans likely cost more than your new home. This is Garth Brooks we're talking about. Do not ever besmirch the name of the only man in America worthy of GOAT status. Garth Brooks can show up in jeans. He can show up
in boots.
Yeah. You can blame it all on his roots. He's going to ruin your black tie affair.
Yeah.
And he did
boots,
that.
Blaming my roots.
Blame it on his roots. He ruined your black tie affair, but he smashed Amazing
he's
Grace.
He's got friends. He's got friends in low places, I know, and in other in high places.
I believe it's
today.
High places.
Yeah. Yeah. He was
but
the last one to know and last
one to show.
He kind
of ruined the black tie affair, though. Like, he kind of did.
Well, that's what happens when you're the last one to know and last one to show.
You
knew
I was
that
a little
you,
more,
you thought you'd see him there.
I was a little more concerned with the maskless face love that Garth was applying to anybody and everybody, including presidents and their spouses.
So you could say that you saw the surprise and the fear in his eyes when he took his glass of champagne?
Yeah, that is another way to say what he said.
Said, honey, we might be through. And that's what he said.
Okay. And I'm out of Garth Brooks lyrics.
I can go for hours.
A lot of Chris Shane Gaines, though. I got a lot of Chris Gaines on the ready and ready to go, though. So that's the good stuff.
It did feel like Garth Brooks maybe was participating in some sort of super spreader event. Like, he took off his mask.
Like he was a weaponized super spreader himself?
Yeah, he took off his mask and then just was like, I need to hug every president I can find. And like he was just hugging them all maskless as soon as I was like, oh my God. It's like an episode of 24. How many times,
by the way, did you think that the guy who walked over to the podium and sprayed it down and wiped it in between every speaker was the next speaker? I had that like
every time. You'd be the 65-year-old white dude who had that job every single time.
Every single time. He wanted to be, oh, who's this? Oh, it's just the guy who's ripping
down. Oh, that's not Roy Blunt. Okay, my bad. I get Roy Blunt and the Sanitation guy confused every single time. But I will say, as cool as the day was and what it symbolized and the history and all of it, I felt like, do you agree that the 22-year-old stole the show? What, Amanda Gorman was her name? I believe
a lot of us are going to be left with that. She was remarkable.
She was incredible.
I did not know there was a such thing as the Youth Poet Laureate of America. I did not know that existed. And then I did not know what to expect. And when she delivered that long and incredibly well-written piece with so much internal rhyme and so much flow, it felt like a Hamilton song.
There were Hamilton references in it.
There were Hamilton. I didn't catch the references.
There were two. She said, because Lin-Manuel Miranda complimented her on Twitter, and she responded and said, "Did you catch the Hamilton references?" So yeah, I think there were two in there.
So there you go. Yeah, stylistically, in terms of the swag with which it was delivered, the meter. And Tanny, as a rap aficionado, that particular style of internal rhyme felt very reminiscent of Hamilton style rapping. So yeah,
so let
I
us leave behind a country better than the one we were left. With every breath from my bronze pounded chest, we will raise this wounded world into a wondrous one. We will rise from the gold-limbed hills of the west. We will rise from the wind-swept northeast where our forefathers first realized revolution. We will rise from the lake-rimmed cities of the midwestern states. We will rise from the sun-baked south. We will rebuild, reconcile, and recover in every known nook of our nation, in every corner called our country. Our people, diverse and beautiful, will emerge battered and beautiful. When day comes, we step out of the shade, aflame and unafraid. The new dawn blooms as we free it. For there is always light if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it.
When I was 22 years old, I was living like a block and a half north of Murphy's pretty close to where Shane lives, like in that general area. That's right.
It explains a lot in terms of radio, actually.
Yeah, was smoking pot every day, sleeping in until about 11 a.m.
Smoke weed every day.
It's about 11 a.m.
Love that in my headphones.
It sounds so good. What kind of music is that? Debating the first big decision of the day was, do I go to Chipotle or do I go to one of the 24/7 365 Mexican restaurants? Like it was either like chain Mexican food or local Mexican food. And then I would drive to Hammond, Indiana and play 5 to 7 hours of live poker.
Oh yeah.
Eat at the buffet, drive back, and then play Xbox and beer pong and darts in my apartment. Like that was pretty much that was my 22nd year on this earth for the most part.
But
and
then when
there's Amanda Gorman, it was unbelievably impressive to watch.
Yeah. So at what point in your day did you sit down to write and then perform the poem for the inauguration? Is what I was going to ask. Yeah.
Yeah.
At no point during the day.
It never came up, and so I was like, oh, that's an accomplished person. She's going places. Very impressive.
It's pretty remarkable. Yeah, at 22, I was living across from the Steppenwolf Theater on Halsted Street. And I was, during the day, simulating entire seasons of Tecmo Super Bowl so we could get together at night and play the playoffs. And we'd each choose a couple of teams to be in the playoffs, and we'd play those out just about every night. And it was always somebody's job during the day to, you know, play or do some simulation to get through. And then maybe we'd go down to either the store or Beaumont's there on Halsted and hit some of those bars at night and then smoke whatever there was to smoke in the house, including resin that we had to scrape if there was none of the good stuff. Sure. I didn't write a lot of poetry that got placed at inaugurations either.
And so when I see that, I'm like, oh, smarter, better public speaker, more talented than I am now, much less at 22 years old. Like it felt like, oh, we're going to be hearing from her 20 years from now. Like it honestly felt like that type of moment. But Shane hated her. That's what I heard anyway. I heard that Shane was not a fan. Is that true, Shane?
Sorry, my mic's broken. 1 second.
I like how you guys both at 22 were living in pretty high rent districts of the city.
I had four roommates, if that makes you feel any better.
I also had I had four roommates, and two of them were boyfriend and girlfriend, which was a terrible idea for them. Horrendous idea.
22, I was at Breyer and Sheridan in Lakeview in like this beautiful 7-story building that had no business being as cheap as it was, with all easterly facing windows. You could see the lake because there was no building higher than it. So, yes, I'm with you on that. Definitely over my skis.
Yeah. I think I paid like $540 a month for my room in rent. Pretty sure that's what my rent was in 2009, 9-10, somewhere in there. Yeah.
You know, I remember my mother always talking to me about Robert Frost speaking at JFK's inauguration. And he did. And I remember Maya Angelou speaking at, I think it was Bill Clinton's first inauguration. And so I went looking today because I'm like, wow, she's in some pretty special company. Who are the category is poets who have recited poetry at presidential inaugurations. And there's only five. She's one of five, or I guess now six. There was Robert Frost. There was Maya Angelou. There's like three others. And now Amanda Gorman. It's pretty amazing that she has joined that very tiny little group.
Yeah. She was it was the opposite of the A-Rod thing. It was like, man, that was weird. But a very, very cool television event today. And if you did miss it, the Amanda Gorman poem that she wrote, performed, is about 6 minutes long. It's circulating everywhere on the internet. I highly recommend.
It was good. Yeah, it was good.
Good.
But A-Rod would be what I remember from today.
not going to be what you remember? Is that what you're
saying? A-Rod will be what I remember about today.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. Well, you do love A-Rod.
I put my daughter aside. I was like, remember this moment. Oh, the female vice president? No. A-Rod. A-Rod's right there next to
J-Lo. By the way, J-Lo, was it me or did J-Lo look like she picked up some of the orange face cream that Don had left behind? Anybody catch that? I was like, wow.
I did not notice that.
That is quite a bronze. Quite a bronze you got going on.
That's another conversation, kind of what Tanny's bringing up. We've talked about it a little bit on here, but assuming our 5-, 6-, and 7-year-old kids can understand anything that's going on right now and using them to co-opt and get social media likes is the number one thing angering me today. Your 9-year-old, your 8-year-old doesn't know what Kamala Harris is here doing. Right?
Well, you're a good parent, as you know, so you definitely get to
get I love your parenting.
Am I wrong about that? I know we talk about my parenting skills often on this show, but am I wrong about that? As three men who have children, am I wrong about that?
Owen was sleeping, so I definitely didn't share the moment with him. But Speaks, you said you were happy that Ruben's class was watching it.
Yeah, I thought it was cool that he would remember this moment. But then I talked about it with him later, and he did not think it was cool. He did not think it mattered at all. Shame. So, yeah, you know, I think, but for some people, like to show their daughter, was Jay Zawoski tweeting about showing Addie, hey, there's the woman.
I don't know. I'm not
president.
Thinking of anybody specifically. I'm thinking more of like the remember the viral tweet, my 4-year-old got down on one knee and said Ruth Conda when Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away. Oh, she didn't. Enough. I'm not thinking
of
anybody specifically here.
Maybe she did because you told her to. Right, when people force their child to be a parrot for what they want.
Yeah, for the Instagram likes. I agree. That's very performative.
That's what I'm talking about. Co-opting for a viral tweet. You know?
Yeah. I also think that you're just very cynical and you hate joy and progress and fun. I think that's also.
I don't hate progress. let's not paint me to be some really bad guy. But joy, yeah.
Yeah, okay, fine, sorry. We'll draw the line at joy for Shane Reardon. That's perfect. Get your questions in, by the way. We end the show with your questions. Speaks is in. It's the Danny Parker Show on The Score.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
For without unity, there is no peace, only bitterness and fury. No progress, only exhausting outrage. No nation. Only a state of chaos. This is our historic moment of crisis and challenge. And unity is the path forward.
Speaking of windows, I'm assuming you're a Steeler fan.
Yeah, I want your body, need your body.
Well done, Danny. It is the Danny Parkin Show. Hub Barker's coming up at 6 o'clock. We'll answer your questions in just a little bit. Matt Spiegel is in, and it was a day of unity. Who do you think of when you think of unifiers, Spiegs, in the sports landscape?
I was thinking about it. Like, there's not many. Like, it's nice to aspire to the ideal of unity and bringing stuff together, bringing people together. Pete Rozelle brought the AFL and the NFL together. But it's not like he was dealing with a lot of mixed races or real, you know, passionate anger based on morals and civic issues and that kind of situation. But in terms of a corporate and sports landscape, he brought the AFL and the NFL together with his little idea, the Super Bowl, that seemed to work out pretty damn well and kind of kept everybody's ego in check. So that's kind of the first one I think of historically.
Obviously, it's just tougher in the context of, like, that's a business merger, right? That made everybody a lot of money, and it worked. It was met with resistance at the time, and there was a lot of ego as to who should ultimately come out on top and that sort of thing. So there was definitely resistance, but that was more of a merger than a healing, unifying sort of thing, which we've seen, like, that sports can be, right? Like, I mean, I remember you know, after September 11th, I went to the Notre Dame game after 9/11, and just being, and it was just, there was a, the whole stadium was led in a prayer, and then everybody was given like a full, like a newspaper sized American flag to hold up with the flyovers, and it felt like a little bit of return to normalcy. And then obviously sports in New York, the World Series in New York, and President Bush throwing out the first pitch, like those are like uniting things, right? Left and right, black, white, people can come together around sports, which is why, yes, part of why we all love them so much. So I feel like sports can be a unifier often for fans, but I'm not sure if that's necessarily what you're driving at.
Yeah, no, I was thinking about like the task of this guy who got sworn in today, and like trying to actually get people with very different ideals and different goals to actually listen to each other and pay attention. Adam Silver in the NBA, it, like managing to force cohesion among the players, dealing with owners who are oftentimes coming from very different political places, and on the heels of some real ugliness with Donald Sterling and some other stuff that had gone on in the NBA. Maybe that's the best modern or current example of that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, and it is more than just Adam Silver. Like, professional basketball in this country does an amazing job, and the WNBA, frankly, has been huge leaders in the social justice movement of the moment through sports. And, I mean, the team in Atlanta is openly campaigning against their owner in the last election cycle and winning. You know, so they've made tremendous ground, and then it goes beyond like equality messages on jerseys or putting Black Lives Matter on the basketball court, which are great and symbolic and all of that. But then like getting owners to commit to using their arenas for voting booths and doing voter registration campaigns and things like that. I mean, when you have the NBA as a 70% black league but a majority white ownership, and then when you think of old white guys who are billionaires, how that traditionally breaks down and how they vote and donate politically and all of that, and how different that is from their workforce, it is kind of remarkable how divided we are as a country right now. NBA owners are like, yeah, do what you want. Put the messages on the floor, your jerseys, your shoes. We'll give you our airtime. You can use our media. Use your platform for your social justice causes, and we don't have a problem with that. It's I think it goes beyond Adam Silver is my point. Like it's all they
the
all
whole
have,
culture
they,
of culture of that sport and that yes. and those leagues.
They've and it it's so they do such a better job than baseball or football or anything. Like the WNBA and the NBA are light years ahead of the others, who are catching up and doing better, by the way, recently. But I think it's because it's become a little bit more convenient for them to do so. Right? It's now like the easy populist majority opinion corporate stance to be like, yeah, of course we're going to come out and say Black Lives Matter because that polls well, as opposed to actually saying that when it was a little bit more difficult to do it. The NBA has kind of been ride or die with that for a lot longer than the other leagues.
I haven't thought about it much, but like the little bit of writing on the back of the football players, it's not on the helmet, it's on the white yoke that comes up from the shoulder pads. There,
is
that little bit
the
of writing.
Technical term of what that is, I'm not sure.
I don't know. It felt right, so I said it. You know, I know a yoke is a thing that like you wear on your shoulders. Like if you're carrying one around, I remember that from Peanuts, from Charlie Brown and Peanuts, for some Linus reason. I have a lot of Linus reasons. I loved that dude. That was my guy. But I didn't really spend a lot of time noticing that this year. Has that been there all year? Like I saw.
Yeah.
Ahmaud Arbery's name was there for the running back on the Saints, for the great running back
Alvin
on
Kamara.
The Saints. For Kamara. Kamara's got Ahmaud Arbery's name there. And I was like, wow, I hadn't paid attention to that for some
Which
reason
is
this year.
Probably how the NFL kind of wants it. You know, like you can do it, but it's in this small font and quick moving ways and all of that. And it's, you know, this is again like this is like the symbolic progress, and it matters. But then there's the deeper stuff that takes political connections and millions and hundreds of millions and billions of dollars and legislative change and the systemic issues of the country and that sort of thing, that putting a name on a helmet or putting a slogan on a basketball court can't really begin to change. And so I think that's what's interesting about, you know, Frank, we've had Sam Acho on the show, and I read Sam Acho's book when I was off between Christmas and New Year's, and I was texting with him a little bit. His relationship with George McCaskey is really interesting. And he went to maximum security prisons with George McCaskey. And the Bears were the first team to get their social justice initiative through the players filled, and because they took it as a challenge, because the owners didn't seem to think, they're like, well, we'll match, but you guys got to generate the money first. And he talked about how, like, he's developed a real friendship with them, and they've done these things. And I think that that is like the next bridge to cross for these, to like really get the owners to throw their wealth around, right? The players are rich, and some of them absolutely are wealthy, but the owners have wealth and generational wealth and family wealth and all the connections that come with it that can kind of address some change that a lot of the players that don't have the stature of like a LeBron James or apparently an A-Rod, who had an audience with three presidents.
This team is on fuego.
Yeah, or four presidents. He Alex Rodriguez had an audience with four presidents today. It's amazing.
Speaking of iPads, Stripling has not allowed a home run in 2019.
Do you think he brought up iPads to them?
He should have.
I mean, I would. I assume it's just the natural segue that gets you from one thing to the other. It is true that sports, it just the activity of sports, just being able to talk about sports as a unifier, man. Like, you know, there's a lot of houses filled with people who feel different ways about different issues and end up watching the game and enjoying that together. I know those houses. I think I'll be in one this Sunday watching the NFC Championship game with one Packers fan and one hardcore Packers hater who are on opposite sides of the presidential voting that just took place as well, and don't really hang out a lot with each other, but they'll be watching the game, tussling with each other and throwing little verbal haymakers that are probably subtly imbued with politics when football's on the forefront of the conversation.
As many things are recently. And, you know, that's the thing. We aren't as different as cable news and social media and all of that make you out to believe, right? We all want the same things. We all want to be healthy and have a good job, and if we work hard to be able to provide a nice life for our kids, save a little bit of money, retire, and not worry about keeping ourselves fed and a roof over our heads and be able to take the occasional vacation, right? Like, we all, left, right, everybody basically believes in those sort of things, but you would think that we are just completely diametrically opposed. And on some issues recently, frankly, it has kind of felt like, whoa, you support this? I can't really now associate with you. And I will admit to feeling that way, frankly, about some things. So the idea of being able to figure out a way to work back from that and just go back to like the basic humanity of like, hey, let's agree on these facts and then disagree about Bears Packers. Like, that does sound like disagree. Doesn't that sound really nice?
It sounds really good.
Totally unrealistic and probably unattainable.
We're like, run the ball or don't run the ball. You know, I like it. Stolen bases, good or bad? You know, like
those are my kind of debates.
Oh yeah, bring it, baby, bring it. Yes. Should you spend $150 million on a right fielder when you're the Chicago White Sox? You know, or not? Let's fight about that. Get some passion in there. Yeah, I'm
well,
down.
Actually, this was one that happened today on Mully and Haw. This was Gordon Whitmire, who brought his argument from his NBC Sports Chicago column to the Score airwaves. Here he is building the case for Tom Ricketts to sell the Chicago Cubs.
I guess they're trying to thread a needle to win the Pacific Coast League. I mean, why don't they act like they own a baseball team, a major market baseball team? Part of the problem is they've put their attention in everything but baseball. Once they came in, they were leveraged to the hilt when they bought the team. It was going to be an austerity-based program anyway of building it back up. So that happened. And they hired the right front office to pull it off, because they did. And then they started making tons of money. The money started rolling in. And they got out from most of that leverage debt to buy the team. And now they poured it in to buying up the neighborhood and to building hotels. And yes, a lot of maintenance at the ballpark, but it's well beyond that. And so when the economic downturn comes, they're not equipped to handle it as easily as some other teams are. That's one thing. That's a business decision. Maybe it's a business mistake. But they're also not willing to take that hit. They're putting it off on the baseball department to slash payroll dramatically, more than anybody else in the game, certainly more than any big market team. And layoffs of ordinary front office workers making ordinary salaries. And these are the decisions they're making. And what it's done at the end of the day is this major market team isn't being operated anything close like a major market baseball team. And they're going to go through this yet a second in 9 years, major painful process of rebuilding, overhauling that roster. It may not take as long as the last time. They may not lose 100 games. They're playing a crap division. But it's ugly. And it's really, if you're a fan, you have a right not to tolerate it.
I think he makes a good case. I think the idea of selling the team is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the idea of not tolerating it is always something that I think is, I come back to the line from Gladiator, like, the mob is fickle, brother. Like, yeah, if you want to tune them out and then tune back in when they're good, do it. Like, my job is to watch sports and talk about it and be entertaining and have as big of an audience as I can through the prism of talking about sports and whatever else, right? Like, that's our job. But, like, it's not the job of a fan.
No, like, they can choose against it.
Right? If you're... I watch more when they're a 100-win team as opposed to when they're a 100-loss team. That's a totally normal thing. So, like, if you hate how the Cubs are doing this right now and the ways they're going to take a step back for the next year or two or three, watch less. They put a worse product on the field, support them less. They put a better product on the field, support them more. Like, that's the cost of doing business, and I have to assume that the Cubs understand that.
Yeah, I think they do, and I think they're bracing themselves for some more... for some decay of the fan base, as well as the delay of any fans around Wrigley, which obviously affects their day-to-day live event bottom line tremendously. You know, it's interesting. To characterize this as the second teardown of a roster, just like they did 9 years ago, it doesn't strike me as a fair comparison or just a fair doubling of that. What happened the first time made all the sense in the world for a ton of baseball reasons. This one is not going to be a full teardown, and there are some baseball reasons attached to it. Like, there's, if you honestly were to look at the life cycles of a team, and if you're not going to keep paying and keep paying and keep paying and keep buying, then there does have to come a point, like the Red Sox or like the Yankees as the obvious organizations, or the Giants or the Phillies on the wrong side of it, the Tigers on the wrong side of it, where you have to make like an evaluation of what's the best way to quickly get back to being good. And I think there is some of that has gone on from Jed Hoyer here and continues to go on from Jed Hoyer here. I think there's a belief that they're not good enough and a decision that the best way to cycle back to it is to admit you're not good enough, perhaps a little bit before other people might have wanted to admit that. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, and I think it's part of why Theo isn't here.
He didn't want to do it.
You deal with that. That sounds awful.
Yeah.
It's going to be painful.
Yeah.
Good luck. Here's my $10 million in salary. I'll go consult for the commissioner's office, and then I'll get a job where this isn't going to be a problem for a while.
Jed's in charge. I'm going on a bender.
Exactly. Let's end the show with some questions before Hub Arcus. Shane, what do we got?
All right, a holdover from yesterday. One of our guys on the Twitch stream, Audio ID Kid, a loyal viewer, Speegs, I need your top five venues to play live as a musician.
Wow. In Chicago? Or, well, yeah, I'll just go Chicago.
Go Chicago.
Top five lists on the spot are tough.
Martyrs on Lincoln,
top
Irving, and
Tuesdays.
Damon. Martyrs is just so great and so artist-friendly and sounds so good. The Park West, the vantage point from the stage of the Park West, whether it's seated or not, if a show is sold out, it's pretty remarkable and pretty powerful. The Vic, especially if there's people all the way up to the top there with the multiple levels. So those three, the Metro there, you know, you can't fake the rock and roll, cred of the Metro. So there's four. And I'll give you another small one, Shuba's as a small rock venue, just incredible vibe and incredible sound, especially when the Shuba brothers themselves were the owners.
Before Louis Capaldi really blew up like the big British guy right now, I saw him at Shuba's in front of like 125 people. It was,
man,
religious.
I bet it was. I bet it was. I've seen magical shows there, and they're more memorable because of the joint, for sure.
Back to Twitch from Ghost Panda 33 for everybody. What was your favorite video game growing up?
I mean, I loved NFL Blitz. I loved Mario Kart. There were so many, man. GoldenEye on N64 was just like, that was the first person shooter, just game changer for me. I played that game for hours and hours. So I'd probably, those are the first three that come to mind for me.
I'll keep it to consoles at the arcade. Miss Pac-Man is number one, as Danny knows, for
You're
me.
You're very good at it.
Qbert. Man, I loved Qbert and Dig Dug. Those were my three go-tos with my quarters and change.
What about you guys?
Danny?
Loved NBA Jam.
Yeah.
I didn't play a lot of video games. My girlfriend and I have been playing Harry Potter Lego on the Wii the last few nights, and that is a blast. Just sit there for like 3 hours playing Harry Potter Lego Wii.
You know what? I
Your
take
life
that back.
Sounds awesome.
I take it back. Sorry, Shane. MVP Baseball 2005.
That's a good
the
one.
The GOAT.
It was a good game.
It's a great game.
Best soundtrack. Game. The best soundtrack. From
NBA Street had a pretty good soundtrack.
Yeah.
Man, 2005 NCAA football back in that era, 2004, 2005 was great. God.
The golden days of being able to make money off college football players' likenesses.
That was fun. That was really fun. Morally, I'm against the exploitation, but damn, it was a good video game.
Back to Twitch from Clark in Chicago. If Speaks could have the moment where he called the election live on air back, would he do it the same, or would he let it derail baseball conversation?
I would probably let it derail baseball conversation. Just a little bit. Just a hair.
From the 630, Danny, you're buying a house. Have you ever shoveled a driveway before? You should probably buy a snowblower.
Yes, I have. That is an expense that just add it to the list. Because, I'm not going to enjoy shoveling. That sounds terrible.
Yeah, no, you need a snowblower immediately for your back, man.
Yeah. No, I'm not.
Be out there.
Yeah, me and Francesa going to be with our snowblower. He talked about himself like he was the A-Rod of snowblowers. Anything that's manual labor, I'm not going to be very good at. So, I'll probably have to get one of them.
Okay, ahead of Wani tomorrow at 5 p.m., where he and I will definitely be sharing a glass of Bradshaw bourbon, what are the two of your favorite bourbons?
I'm not really a bourbon guy. I'm a Scotch guy.
You're a Scotch guy. What's your favorite Scotch?
Oban is my Scotch of choice, and Macallan. Oban and Macallan are my two go-tos.
So I feel like Basil Hayden's is just so damn easy to drink, but I like Woodford Reserve also quite a bit. The Four Roses single batch is also a delicious, like really, really good, like bang for your buck bourbon.
Tanny, favorite bourbon?
Probably the Belfour stuff that we got from Ed Belfour.
Did you get the rye or did you get the bourbon?
I got all of it. I took all of it home.
Oh, good.
Do you guys only drink bourbon from athletes? Only athlete bourbon?
Yeah.
Is that where you are?
Is there another kind?
Yeah.
From our friends. From our athlete friends.
Yeah, our good friends.
Excuse me. Excuse
our good
me.
Friends send us bottles.
But not me. Yeah, I get it. I do have some bourbon. Some Belfour bourbon. But Shane stole my Bradshaw bourbon.
I didn't steal your Bradshaw bourbon. Dave Wanstead gave it to us.
He gave it to you and your wife.
Yeah, me and my wife.
It's infuriating.
That I did hear.
I literally did not steal your bourbon.
No, I know. I know.
By the way, your wife, is that what you're calling the meat in the freezer these days?
Yeah.
Is that your wife?
Yeah, that's my wife.
Honey! Coming to visit.
I shut it down.
I forgot to take some chicken thighs out of the freezer this morning, so I've got like... So this is the hard part.
Not very easy to make a sandwich tonight.
I've got a full 7 cubic foot deep freezer in my bedroom closet, but if I forget to take that protein out in the morning, I still have to walk across the street to Mariano's before I go home and get chicken thighs, all while knowing there's frozen ones in my freezer.
That's frustrating. If anyone's confused why we're talking about that, Shane claimed that making his own fried chicken sandwich was easier than getting one from the drive-thru at Popeyes. So, yeah.
Stretch.
How long is it going to take you tonight?
Well, according to you, it's a 24-hour process, but the majority of that is idle time. It'll probably take me, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes tonight.
And just to be clear, it's your chicken that you're soaking in buttermilk for 24 hours?
Yeah,
just to be clear.
You leave it sit overnight in a bowl of buttermilk. You're talking like this is one of the hardest things in the world. Drop the chicken in a damn bowl of buttermilk and shut up.
Yeah. With all that buttermilk I've got lying around. Tell you what, if I had that two-story walk-in fridge, I'd have plenty of buttermilk.
Do you not
and lots
keep
of room.
Buttermilk?
Not around. Oh. No, I don't. Sorry.
It lasts like 3 months, buttermilk.
That's good to know.
Is it just butter and milk?
No, it's milk and vinegar. And milk. Jesus Christ.
Damn. My God.
Go eat your raw Brussels sprouts.
Half of our job on this show is to just educate and cultivate the Danny. That's really all it is.
Thank you.
Try to housebreak him over the next few months.
It's not easy. It's not an easy task that you guys are faced with. Shane really outdid himself today. Layla Rahimi and Les Grobstein were our guests. Thank you to Shane Reardon for producing.
Killed it!
Chris Tannehill makes us sound better than we are each and every day. For Matt Spiegel, I'm Danny Parkes. This is the Danny Parkes Show. Hub Arkish coming up next on The Score.
It's over, man. It's over. It's all gone. It's all over. It's all over, man. All over. Enjoy. All the slack jawing's over. It's over.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.